Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hello, Mortgage World. Welcome to the program. This is Monday, October 19th. We're looking forward to getting into a great discussion about a lot of the issues going on in the industry. We just came back from San Diego, gorgeous, beautiful San Diego. We had a wonderful time out there and attended the National Mortgage Banking Conference, the annual conference. And we got a lot to talk about from that. We want to welcome a lot of the guests that are calling in for the first time as a result of us being there and them learning about our program. Thank you so much, whether you're listening to the recorded version after the fact or if you're listening to us live, we want to welcome you to the program. Again, this is David Lickin, your host. I'm president and of Mortgage Banking Solutions. We're a consulting firm out here in the Austin, Texas area. The purpose of this program is not to promote ourselves, but really help you, the listener, those of you that are involved in the mortgage lending industry, sort through so many of the issues that are going on out there. And there's nothing that's ever more hot than interest rates. And so let's, without further ado, break to our good friends, Joe Farr, who is president of works at MBS Quote Line. And then also, is Scott going to join us on the call today?
No, he's out of town today.
Well, you know what? You let him out of town a lot lately, so
I know.
But anyway, Joe, good to have you on the call. Give us a rundown on what happened last week in interest rates. A lot of volatility there.
Yeah, we had a bit of a rise in rates last week. Most of the economic news that came out last week was a little better than people expected, and a couple of things happened. One was that the stock market rose, and I'm sure we're all aware and kind of rejoiced over the fact that the Dow got back above 10,000. But that same information that pushed the Dow so much higher also helped push mortgage rates higher, and we ended the week about 15 to 20 basis points higher than the week before, and that's a couple of weeks in a row that we've seen rates rise.
It was great to see the Dow in one sense heading up as we saw it. In fact, I was doing an interview, Joe, with a reporter from the Wall Street Journal who was in our suite interviewing myself and my partner Andy Schell. My business partner Andy Schell, and we had a great conversation. He was sitting next to the television, which we had on muted in the background, and we were listening to the report or watching the news as it broke over 10,000. It was kind of interesting sitting there with the guy from Wall Street Journal interviewing us. Great interview, great time. It was just interesting timing. But yeah, the rates moved. What was the driving factor? A lot of positive economic information, it sounded like.
Yeah, it was. Retail sales were better than expected. Industrial production was better than expected. Utilization is still pretty low, but that's also that's a good thing for mortgage rates because that helps restrain inflation. But the manufacturing, the New York Empire State Index was better than expected. Jobless claims were a little lower than expected. So, the combination of those things and then what impact they had on stocks, pushing stock prices higher kind of also has the impact of pushing mortgage rates higher as people get out of the stock or out of the mortgage-backed securities and into stocks as they're seeing the stock market improve. So, combination of all those. Now, the good thing was, and the thing that we, being so concerned about mortgage rates, need to keep an eye on is inflation. And last week, the Consumer Price Index was released, and that came in at a very tame rate.
Hello?
I think we had one of those technology glitches somewhere out there in the program, but I think we're back alive. Sorry, Joe, we lost a little bit of you there. I just heard
really?
A beep,
okay.
And everything went dead just for a few moments. I was talking to our producer in the other ear, and he says, "Nope, I think we're back." So, sorry for the glitch there. Not sure what happened. Anyway, so you finish up that last couple comments, if you could kind of go back and cover that.
You know, inflation's low, which is great. 1.5% annualized inflation rate as per the CPI. This week we see PPI come out. So, you know, as long as inflation remains low, even though the economy's picking up steam and the stock market's doing well, those are both going to pressure rates higher, but not quite like they would be going if inflation were really picking up. Dave also wanted to bring up a couple other things that happened last week. The Fed minutes were released, and those are always a great insight into what the Fed's thinking. From those minutes, I think the perception is that the Fed's outlook for the rest of this year and for 2010 was a little better than what they had in prior meetings. But the thing that I wanted to bring up, and is so important to all our listeners, is the program for purchasing mortgage-backed securities. As we've talked about, the Fed announced at the end of their last meeting that the MBS purchase program was not going to be extended in amount, but was going to be extended in time, meaning that they were going to spend the same $1.25 trillion, just do it over an extra 3 months. With the idea that they would begin to wean the industry off there being such a significant purchaser. What was important in the minutes was that was given a lot of consideration. Apparently a lot of time was spent discussing that mortgage-backed security purchase program, and there was some dissent. There were Fed governors that wanted to expand the program. But since they did not, and since the group's vote was that they were not going to extend it, I think that we can pretty much rule out that they're going to extend increase the amount of purchases. And I guess the only caveat to that would be if we were to take a significant turn for the worse in the economic recovery.
Yeah, I would say that would be the only thing that would really drive everyone back to that decision. But I think it is significant. So, Joe, knowing that, you know, the economy, the reports on the economy came in very positive, is it fair to say that, and knowing that, that the Feds have a published data statement that they're not probably going to continue the program, that they're going to phase it out into, you know, Q1 of 2010, it's fair to say then, is it not, that we've seen the lowest of the interest rates, and that at the very least we're going to hover in this range, but most likely there's going to be more upward pressure than anything else?
I believe that way, Dave. I think that a couple of weeks ago we hit rates that were the lowest we'd seen since May. Over the last 2 weeks they've risen a little bit. You know, they're still very, very low. But, you know, it's going to be hard for me. I find it hard to see circumstances such that we're going to return to the lows of a couple of weeks ago, and certainly be hard to return to the lows we saw in May. This MBS purchase program is the biggest reason I say that. Over time, as they wind out, we've got to find replacement investors, and I'm just concerned that those replacement investors are going to require higher yields.
Yeah, especially with how we've treated in recent months here, how we've treated those that have already invested in that. It seems like those that have invested in mortgages are the ones that are taking the hit as we do the loan modifications and look at the future. And I tell you, boy, that worries me as we look at the Fed's backing out. But, Joe, thank you so much, as you are always each week bringing us the content. Again, if you could go to the website and see their updated information, it's I'm looking at their website right now. Tremendous. Before we take a break, let's take a quick look at what's on the economic calendar. I'm on your website looking at it. We've got core PPI, PPI, and the housing starts on Tuesday, and then Wednesday, the Fed beige book, jobless claims again on Thursday. Give us a kind of a flavor of what I know. I see the numbers up here, but run through those real quickly for our listeners.
Well, the PPI is going to be another, it's a not as significant an announcement regarding inflation, but certainly significant, and that comes out tomorrow. Housing starts and existing home sales are both going to come out this week, and the strength or the recovery, if there is one, in the housing market, is going to really show what direction we think economic activity is going. Housing starts coming out on tomorrow, and existing home sales on Friday. Always important is how much is the Treasury going to ask for investors to buy to fund the debt. On Thursday, another announcement is going to be made as to what they're going to try to or what they're going to offer for auction the following week. And it's always surprising to me that somewhere along the way people are finding additional investors to fund all the debt that we have.
Well, there's certainly a lot of capital in the markets looking for a good investment. The mortgage industry is a great place to invest. And, Joe, thank you so much for coming to us. Please stay on the program, as we want you to participate in so much that we have coming up. But let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLand delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLand, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLand today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back. Thank you so much. Alice Alvey, president of Mortgage U, is with us, as she is there every week, digesting the host of issues that are going on in the mortgage world. And the legislative, the calendar is crammed full with activity. We try to bring that relevant information, the latest developments, and that's what we're going to go about. The second segment of every one of our programs is the legislative update. Alice, good to have you back. By the way, it's so good to see you and Andy in San Diego. Thank you so much for joining the program, as always.
Oh, thanks, Dave. It was great to see you there, too. It really was a great convention. I'm really glad I went. It's always good to connect with people and get back to that face-to-face. We spend so much time on email communication these days. So in any case, so here we go, right? I don't even know where to start. The list keeps getting longer. But just for those of you, we promise to do just a quick summary all the time. So we still hanging out there. We have our old House Bill 1728 that technically did pass the House way back in May. That's talking about major reform, mortgage reform, and anti-predatory lending act. That's still sitting out there, but we haven't seen any activity on it. House Bill 3044, which was to impose the moratorium on the Home Valuation Code of Conduct. I just keep saying this thing's got to be dead because it's worded poorly now that FHA is getting on the bandwagon. So those of you who are hoping for HBCC to go away now that FHA's joined in, I don't think we're going to see any change there. But so that one we don't see too much. It's still sitting in committee. House Bill 3126 is actually listed for the Consumer Financial Protection Agency, the CFPA, is actually listed on one of the main sites as a hot bill. So when you think of everything going on nationally, the fact that our CFPA is getting a lot of attention is one that we think everybody in this industry needs to pay attention to. That hasn't technically moved anywhere, but we do have more and more of the banking and credit union agencies are trying to speak up, saying they're concerned about this. How far-reaching is that agency's authority going to be? So that's still pending, hasn't technically gone anywhere, still in committee in the House. We have the 21st Century FHA Housing Act. House Bill 3146 did pass the House a little over a month ago now. I haven't actually seen Senate activity yet. We should see that moving. That's got a lot of positive to it. I think everybody wants to make sure FHA has enough resources to get shored up. And then the FHA Taxpayer Protection Piece Act, House Bill 3706, this is the one that we're a little concerned with as well, that's trying to propose that borrowers would have to have a 5% down payment on an FHA loan. You know, we keep saying, let's let the credit risk officer get in there and see what the smartest things are for FHA, not have Congress determine how much of a down payment should be on an FHA loan. Right?
That's so true.
I'm sorry, but, you know.
Amen.
Amen. Okay. So, well, all right. Well, we'll watch that. Watch that one very closely, everybody. There are a few other ones out there that, you know, we don't think impact us too much. Now, from a proposed rule standpoint, you know, the big ones we've been talking about are the proposed rule called Home Secure Credit. This is the sweeping Truth in Lending changes that actually is the one that talks about elimination of yield spread, premium, and overages. That should get some people's attention. That's the one, Dave, we've talked about every week.
Yep.
We're counting down to day 67.
Yep, down to 67, man.
Yep.
Pay attention to that one. That has got... That's loaded with some quote-unquote Christmas presents that nobody wants. It's the Christmas Grinch that's bringing some of that stuff on us.
Yeah. Well,
Dave,
I'm sorry. I just want to say our last proposed rule was the bill that we're watching is the one to try and extend the home buyer tax credit because that expires at the end of November. There's multiple bills out there trying to get our $8,000 first-time home buyer tax credit renewed, but nothing's gotten legs under it yet.
And to say, Joe, you had a comment for a question.
Yeah, the home secure credit rule, I'm sure had to have been the topic of conversation at the MBA, but I haven't read much about it.
It was a great way to tee up the next segment because that's what we're going to be talking a huge amount is the next segment. We're going to get into talking about so much what that was discussed, and there's no way that we're going to cover all the topics, but we're going to give you a high-level discussion on that. So, Joe, I couldn't have done a better job teaming up our next segment, but we'll be with that in just a moment. Please stay tuned and we'll be right back right after this word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
You know what? I love that music. You know, two more cups of coffee and that music, and I'm going to be I'm already dancing at the desk here I don't know if it's anxiety as we look at all the regulations coming out, the coffee I'm drinking, or just some of the technical difficulties we had just before we went live. But Alice, there is a lot going on. Joe, you just opened that up, that's the segment up with a question. Let's go right into it, because there was a lot of discussion about this at the conference, but I think most of the discussion was in the hallways about a lot of this, and not as much, at least what I heard, from within some of the sessions. Alice, was that what you said?
I would agree with you that a lot of it, you know, the sessions did not zero in on how should people respond to this proposed rule. You're right, it was hallway discussions on, you know, what are you going to do? Do you think this is really going to happen, that we're going to have to relook at, or that I guess you could look at that a proposed rule is going to come down and judge how loan officers can be compensated?
Well, I mean, there again, every conversation I ran through the hall, they said, hey, what are you thinking about that? And what was really interesting is people say, I wish there was a resource where we could go to listen to it. Not enough is being written on it. There's not enough to talk about it. So I hand them the card about our radio program, and I tell you, that's why so many people are listening in today, that we're at the conference, and we're going to be coming back and going through this. So, Joe, it's really interesting, some of the feedback that we did get. I ran the session. I was the moderator for the session entitled Success Strategies for the Independent Mortgage Banker. what was interesting, what we wanted to call it was the future of independent mortgage banking, because, you know, the title suggests that there is a future, and I do believe there is a future for the independent mortgage banker, but certainly there are some attacks on that, and without question on the mortgage brokerage world, but certainly on the thinly capitalized mortgage bankers. And the feedback we got after, first of all, our session seated about 250 people in our breakout session. We had one of the larger breakout rooms. It was jam-packed with people, good questions. And as I looked across the audience, especially as Scott Cooley talked, I had Scott Cooley of Cooley Consulting. I had Craig Ficardi of the Tower Group, great speaker, did a great job, and had Tim Stearns, the president of Lenders One, all of which did an outstanding job of presenting the facts. Scott Cooley's comments were probably some of the most how would you say it, Alice? Was some of the more pessimistic?
I was downstairs. I came down the escalator, and one guy said, "Wow, where are all these people coming from?" I said, "Well, they just came from the seminar," and the guy was not very upbeat. He could see all the people coming down the escalator with these glum faces.
Well, it was good to have the people there, Joe, that were at, and we're all listening, but the independent mortgage banker's got some things to worry about. Certainly the mortgage broker community has a whole lot to worry about with, you know, especially when we're going to be regulating how loan originators, mortgage brokers are compensated. I mean, that's serious. That's serious stuff coming at us. But, Joe, I mean, there's some of the discussions. I mean, you were back here manning the ranch and watching interest rates and keeping us all informed what's going on. We missed you out there. But what have you heard anything from the circles that you run in as to any questions you have about the conference and what went on?
Dave, I think everyone's just so numb with all the changes going on, and how do you deal with it? How do you stay up with all the various regulations, and how do you train your staff such that those people are going to do what they're supposed to do, know how they're supposed to do it, and do it the first time? That's the feedback I have, is just that it's just so much to keep up with.
Well, and I think you can't just go by national viewpoints. You know, there's so much of this is almost by zip code. You can't even go by state in terms of what is the economic outlook for different real estate markets.
It is so true. I mean, we're seeing, Alice, you're in Detroit. I mean, you look at what's going on up there, and what, you know, the chances of recovery, for a quick recovery out of this, is certainly different than Texas, where I live, and the whole time where Joe and I live, and where we work. The outlook is just completely different. And then what was really interesting, one of the Scott's comments was, is we have not seen the bottom of the MAR real estate market for California, Nevada, Arizona, and that southwestern part of the United States. We have not seen the resets, a lot of the pay option arms that are going to go through another round of adjustments, that's there, and you know, we want to be optimistic. I think we're optimistic and bullish about the industry overall as far as the independent mortgage banker is concerned, but I mean, there's a lot of bad news in specific markets yet to digest.
Well, and Joe, I think you were talking about just the idea that what the overall economic news is different from what the mortgage industry news and the real estate news is.
Such a good point.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what does impact mortgage rates, and what will impact the housing recovery, and what will impact our industry, is what does inflation do? And as we begin to get out of this, with so much stimulus in the economy, with so much money in the economy, it's going to be hard to avoid. It's going to be, and what we're starting to hear right now is when will the Fed begin to tighten? Not will they, it's when. And
yeah.
And how soon, and apparently there's a lot of disagreement there. So,
well, I'm just encouraged that they're at least they're having a dialogue on it, formed a final conclusion on that. I mean, I think there's, again, that's looking at the glass half full. Let's keep some, as long as there's some discussion there, whether or not they should or shouldn't. So
right,
I think more
right.
economic data should be coming out. Well, here's an interesting headline. I'm just on National Mortgage News' website and looking on there that The nation's largest MI company posts a huge loss but gets Fannie Mae okay. They're going to post a loss for the third quarter of $518 million, just for the third quarter alone. I mean, that is having an impact still on the infrastructure of many key players in our industry. MGIC has been around as long as Fannie and Freddie have been around. And to hear these kind of losses, you look at this and going, what? Yeah, how much more can some of these entities survive, or how much more loss can they survive before we see them go away?
Well, I think what you've got going on that we're seeing every day is the repurchase requests that are driven by the loans with MI on them. They don't want to pay claims. Their losses are high, and so there are a lot of pushbacks on the claims. And so the economic news, if that doesn't start to brighten up, you're going to see that this just more and more pressure on the loans with mortgage insurance. I mean, we've got customers who've called us. They've got a loan that's 4 years old that they're being asked to repurchase over something that didn't get documented 100% perfectly at the point of underwriting. Now, the loan performs for 4 years, then the borrower loses their job. Now it's a problem, and the MI company doesn't want to pay the claim. So, that's going to cause everything to tighten up even more as we're trying to look at underwriting going forward. So we need economic conditions to turn around to help start to lighten some of this up.
Yeah, and I want to say we have so many mortgage brokers that are listening to the program. We're just thrilled to have you on the program, and I tell you, while the news is serious and there's definitely some ominous clouds, if not some thorough storms going on, Joe and I lived through some thunder boomers, as we call them here in Texas, that are just horrific. It feels like the end of the world when one of those lightning and thunderstorms hit us here. It can so dynamic. And that's kind of feel like what we're missing, especially as from the broker's perspective. When you have these kind of losses, everyone's going, what happened? Where is it going? And I'll be the first to say, throwing the broker under the bus is absolutely at fault. I listened to a number of interviews on this while at the conference, and then because of my time on television, the interviews I do on television, I stay up on them. I mean, to say that the broker is responsible for this is absolutely one of the most ludicrous statements I've ever heard. They were a participant in the process, but you know what? It was Wall Street that really created a lot of these programs and gave them the rate sheets and the program guidelines. What they did is went out and sold what was available.
Exactly. Yep. And there was an appetite for it in the investment market.
I think what is alarming, if you look at the product mix, I write for the Scotsman's Guide, and it's a great publication to go out there. But you look at a few years ago, the pages and pages and pages of niche products. And, there are none. I mean, the VA loan volume has risen 80% in the fiscal year. I mean, the Department of Veterans Affairs has guaranteed $68.2 billion of single-family loans for the fiscal year ending September 30th. I mean, that's an 80% spike from last year. The government is in this market in such a big way, Joe and Alice. You start looking at that. If we start seeing them back away from this, it's something to be very, very aware of and planning a strategy around. So,
well, I know we were talking a little bit too about the change in the FHA minimum net worth requirements. That right now that's really a press release that's come out of FHA. So we are going to keep watching for. They're saying that that's going to be done through a proposed rule. So as of today, I haven't seen that that's posted. But we're just going to see higher capital requirements coming in from all the agencies now.
Well, we found it when we sat, Joe, you ran secondary for a number of companies. You're probably one of the sharper secondary guys out there. I mean, it used to be, we watched a dramatic change in the capital requirements for many sellers in the market. And what we're seeing is continually each one of the conduits saying, you know what, our net worth requirements, we'll buy from someone with a $500,000 net worth, but we're really going to monitor it. And if they're wanting, and we're going to mandate that they do it in a best efforts basis. And in order to do things on a mandatory basis, sell on a mandatory basis, in other words, there's a pair off if you don't deliver that loan. For those that don't understand the difference between best efforts and mandatory, a best efforts is like you know, if like when you're brokering a loan, if you lock a loan to an investor, if it doesn't fund, then there's no financial penalty to you. But those rates are a little bit higher, the price is a little bit higher than the mandatory basis, where you've got to deliver that loan or you pair out of it. So the difference between the capital requirements for someone selling into the secondary markets on a mandatory basis, the pricing is more favorable. There's been huge spreads. Now they've narrowed back down a bit. They're still, you know, still very attractive, but they've narrowed down. But what we're seeing is the capital requirements to participate in the mandatory programs have quietly gone up to over $1 million, and many times $1.5 million. Fannie and Freddie, $2.5 million. And so there's even still more talk about Freddie going up to another level on the capital requirements. So there's a lot of shift. It is important to bring out that we heard it was talked about at the conference, in the halls of the conference, as if the capital requirements for HUD had already happened. That's why we've got Alice tracking this, and she'll bring us a report, but it wasn't. And if it comes through a rule change, it could happen fairly quickly, could it not, Alice?
Well, if it comes in a proposed rule process, then we'll obviously have our window there, you know, our 90-day window to be able to provide comments and be able to make the case for there are a lot of good mid-sized companies that are doing business, and maybe 500,000 is a more realistic number, but I don't know. Commissioner Stevens seems pretty set on $1 million for a minimum net worth requirement. But then going with that puts all the wholesalers responsible for the brokers. So they would just be essentially going down to just the supervised or non-supervised mortgagee lender approval level. There wouldn't be a loan correspondent level per se anymore that HUD managed. It would be managed by the wholesalers.
I think that some increased capital requirements were necessary. I think that we had gotten so loose with whose reps and warranties we would take and what they really meant. If these capital requirements are instead of that provision, I don't know where it stands, Alice. It was in one of the bills that you talked about where there were proposals that would require the originator to keep a 5% interest in the loan as skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd all much prefer to have increased capital requirements than to have to maintain that kind of risk. Let's hope it's not both.
Right.
Yeah. And the reality is, if you do the calculations on the skin of the game, I mean, all you have to do is bring that math to whoever's going to be considering that, and you realize virtually that's going to put every independent mortgage banker out of business. And quite frankly, only the largest of the large will survive those kind of – and even there, if they get all the volume, even they cannot survive a 5% skin of the game. So there's a lot of theories and conspiracy theories going on in the marketplace about, you know, who's behind this, what's going on. I'll tell you this, all of the major conduits were there. We had the privilege of sitting down with some of the BAC, Bank of America execs, and had a great conversations with them. I know some of them are listening in on the program. We welcome you. I think there's a strong argument. In fact, Andy Schell, my business partner, sat in one meeting and said they made a strong argument. I won't name the exec that made it, but it was a real strong argument. Anybody with less than $1.5 million, you know, or $2 million, $2.5 million net worth really doesn't have any business in the mandatory markets. Shouldn't be hedging, and there's a risk to that. And while the gains are fat, and during that particular time where we have large spreads, it sure is tempting for everybody to get into it, but a lot of people are not experienced. They get in there, they get in trouble, and then they have to call a consulting firm like us and pay fees to help us out of the mess, even if we can't get them out. Some of the other topics, Alice, that you heard as you walked the halls, it was great again seeing you there. What are some of the other things that you heard about?
You know, I think there was still a little bit of a talk about HBCC and, you know, where is this going and the impact it's having on the market, especially since FHA's mortgagee letter had come out just a little bit before the conference, and, you know, people trying to adjust, and the fact that FHA's position is that the fee has to be broken out. That you know, so we spent some time talking to a few appraisal management companies, and the idea of the appraiser's fee has to show independently from the fee of the appraisal management company on an FHA loan is something that I think a lot of the AMCs have to look at. So, you know, it seemed like every conversation kind of circled around which piece of legislation and regulation are you worried about right now. So.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, we're a great resource for those that want to kind of check it out, see what's going on. Before we take a break, Alice or Joe, do you have any comments on this? Some of the talking points on this segment that we have. Is there anything we intended to cover that we haven't covered? It doesn't sound like it.
Well, I was going to wait for Joe to go because I always have something to say. How do we keep her under control?
You and I are bashful.
Well, you go, Alice.
The white one in the group here.
Well, no, I guess I'm just, I want to make sure people know they need to get in and have their voice heard about the Home Secure Credit and the Truth in Lending potential changes. So just make sure you go in and place your comments about this proposal. There are a lot of changes within that. It's not short. It's a 600-page read, but there are several summaries out there on different blogs to be able to get a handle on what the key issues are for that. And don't whine in your responses. They need some facts about...
Well, you know, we needed to have a whole breakout session just to talk about how to jump in and make an intelligent, effective response in all that's going on. And number one is no whining.
Right.
No whining can be allowed. They should put a big no whiner sign out there. Well, I appreciate you guys so much for being on this. You want to stay tuned for our next segment. We've got a special guest coming on the program to talk about a new book she just is publishing, and we're excited to have her on the phone with us. So we're going to have Dale Robin Siegel as a guest right after this word. Stay tuned.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back, and we are honored to have Dale Robin Siegel as a guest. Dale, good to have you on the program.
Thank you, David.
Well, we're kind of this high energy group here. We got lots of discussion here, but Alice and I and Joe have got a bunch of questions for you, Dale, but let's start out by talking about the new book you just published. By the way, I should say Robin is from the New York area. She's an attorney. She's has practiced a law in the area of residential real estate transactions, foreclosure, bankruptcy, workouts. You're certainly an expert. I imagine you're busy in that area right now, Dale. And then also commercial transactions. You have been an adjunct professor at the New York University, and that you have just – I look at your resume, Dale, I'm going, and then you got into being a mortgage broker. I'm thrilled to have you on the program, and we want to talk about your new book entitled The Rules, The New Rules for Mortgages. Welcome to the program. What prompted you, Dale, to write this book? Why now?
Well, timeliness is everything, I think.
yes.
The book is actually the basis for my basic How to Buy Real Estate seminar. So the book follows a seminar that I've been doing for about 10 years. Of course, over the past 6 months, 8 months, we've revised it many times, and listening to your show, we know why. We had to keep revising it.
Yeah.
So it's pretty current. It's a consumer book. It's a consumer publication.
That's good. So you're talking about new rules for the consumers. Man, you know, I listened to an interview just recently between Michael Moore and Sean Hannity, and it was really interesting dialogue. And if anyone who knows me probably knows that I'm probably not an avid follower of Michael Moore. However, I talked to more people. He actually argued that Sean Hannity was saying a lot of the problem, it came to consumers needed, you know, that were at the
problem or at the fault here. And certainly there's some new rules or some new thinking consumers need to take on, but I'll tell you, I would still lay the bulk of the problem at some of the crazy loan programs that came out there, Dale. Let's talk about some of the new rules that you're proposing in your book. Give us a brief rundown on them.
Well, from the consumer end, that the average borrower needs to know that their credit score needs to be much higher than it was a year ago, than it was required a year ago. Minimum credit scores are now around 680. A good credit score is over 720 now. 720 plus is considered a good credit score. Whereas 2 years ago, if you were alive, you can get a loan regardless of what your credit score was.
Yeah, we used to say there was this expression, fog the mirror here, fog here,
yeah.
Fog the here, sign here. And it was, if you were alive and breathing, you got a mortgage loan. And that certainly has changed. 720, yeah. I mean, that was used to be the high end if you had 720. But now that's starting to get the closer to being more of the floor, especially listening to some of the old credit overlays, Robin.
Yep.
Well,
The fact is that that's what the banks require, but with the economy the way it is and the way consumers are spending and not paying their bills, the average credit score is going lower and lower. So it's a problem.
I would think that with your background as an attorney and as a mortgage broker out there that you have a unique perspective. What are you hearing, Robin, from the consumers that are coming to you for applications? Do they seem to be aware of what's going on, or are they oblivious of the changes?
I think that when people are in the when they're doing it, when they've decided that they either need to refinance or they're purchasing a house, they start doing research. They're more interested in the topic and the timeliness of the topics and the changes. So they will read local and national newspapers. They will go online more, and they will try to get an understanding of what's required by them. Whereas a couple of years ago, nobody really cared because they knew they can get a mortgage regardless. So I think people are self-educating themselves a little bit more, which is good.
Yeah, I think there's no question that it's important that consumers get an increased awareness of what's going on in the marketplace. I'm not sure that it's being covered as much as it needs to be in the general marketplace. Let's talk a moment. As a mortgage broker, we talk about as our program is for mortgage brokerage originators, loan officers, and mortgage bankers, that anyone involved literally in the mortgage lending industry. What is your perspective? Are you hearing about the changes that are coming on the mortgage broker? I'd love to get your perspective on that, especially with you being an attorney and with all the legislation that's pending.
Well, you hear everything that's going on. Most people, unfortunately, don't care until it actually happens. I'm a mortgage broker, so we deal with the wholesale lenders. What I find that our wholesale lenders, I'll use Wells Fargo for an example, are trying to stay ahead of the game. They educate their mortgage brokers with constant memos, sort of blips or summaries of the new legislation and what's going to happen, and new forms that are coming out January 1st that we're all talking about. What they're trying to do is set themselves up 4 months in advance, 6 months in advance. So that's good. If the wholesale lenders and conduits are prepared, then they're going to prepare the mortgage brokers they do business with, which obviously, if they're educated on the topics, they'll be able to educate their clients and comply.
Well,
so everybody has to do it.
Yeah, everyone has to be staying up on this, and I think I compliment any of the correspondent lenders out there that are or any of the wholesalers in the marketplace for doing the job of educating their people and their clients, specifically the brokers. I think it's great, and I think Wells Fargo does probably as good a job as anybody out there. Some of the others are needing to do that, but they're distracted with a lot of things going on, earnings and the different issues like that.
Yeah.
This book that you published is something that is really of an interest to me because I see consumers still living in a world of the way it used to be. How much down can I still put zero down? I mean, I filed bankruptcy. Who do I need to talk to get a loan? I mean, the game has really changed, hasn't it, Robin?
Yeah, the game has changed completely. And if somebody called me up and said, I just declared bankruptcy last week, can I get a loan? I'd say no. And that would be the end of the conversation.
Yeah,
so
really,
the mortgage broker is the educator and the advisor and really needs to squash a lot of this in the beginning. When a consumer or a potential client calls up and says, can I do this? The answer should be no. Not, well, let me see. Let me throw it against the wall and see if it sticks, because it's not going to stick. So
yeah,
why
the wall has
up?
Gotten very Teflonish. There's a lot of Teflon been sprayed on the wall. There's no sticking to a lot of those old programs.
Right.
What would you want people to know about your book? I mean, yes, it's just recently published, is it not?
Yeah, it just came out September 1st. Penguin published it, so it's in pretty much all the national booksellers and, of course, online, Amazon, et cetera. I think that they like the book because it's not the typical how-to book that covers everything and anything. It's very concise and the mortgage industry is state by state, as you guys talk about. You know, there's national regulations, but then there's state requirements also. So what I did in the book was I made it very general. So if you were buying the book and buying property in Michigan, you would get the same background and basic rules as somebody in New Jersey, which is good. Because
that
a lot
good.
Of these how-to books are written state-specific. You could tell where the author lives just by the language and terminology that you're using.
Yes.
So I tried to stay general. The process is the same regardless of where you go, where you live. And the process is still basically the same as it was 2 years ago. It's the qualifications that have changed completely, which I was lucky to let the publisher let me rewrite it, even up to April 2009. We were able to include a lot of the new guidance for consumers, and it pretty much stopped in the spring, beginning of the summer, for the consumer end, you know, the qualifying with income assets credit. So it's very current.
Do you think the rules and the regulation that's coming out is helping or hurting the consumers based on the perspective that you're seeing out there?
I think you have to say it's helping and hurting. It's helping the consumer in that it's giving them time to think and time to understand. It's hurting them because there's just too much information out there. I mean, a three-page good faith estimate, try and get them to read a one-page. Right.
So true.
You know, and the most important form that the government or the administration or whoever decided this is the truth in lending statement that they need to get a revised copy within 3 days of the closing if the numbers have changed an eighth of a point up or down. But did they even understand this form 2 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago? They're certainly not going to understand it now. So I think a lot of what the administration or the powers that be, I think they're zeroing in on the wrong things. You know, even the appraisal issues, they're zeroing in on the wrong things. So it's helping the consumer in that they have the potential to get the proper information. The problem is that it's becoming convoluted and bogged down with disclosures. Every time you turn around, there's something else somebody needs to sign. And it's very confusing.
I understand everyone's good intentions, the regulator's good intentions. I mean, they want to go out and try to protect the consumer, but I have yet to see any piece of legislation effectively do that. And at the end, we've increased another level of bureaucracy. We've brought another level of cost into the structure. In the end, the consumer is – well, look at HVCC as an example. Again, came in because there was a concern that mortgage brokers and bankers, anybody involved in the lending process, were steering appraisals to those that would give them the highest value or, you know, quote-unquote, work with the originator, the mortgage broker, mortgage banker, the loan officer, to get them a better deal. Now what we have, we don't have any evidence that that's really – there was no real solid evidence, with a few exceptions, that was in fact going on. And now we have huge delays that are literally, in fact, could be impacting some of the statistics on existing home sales. It's really been, again, I don't think there's a better example, Robin. Excuse me, Dale. I know Robin Siegel, so I keep going to that. Sorry about that. But Dale, I think that's something that's a great example of so many people out there. Saying, you know what, you tried to help me, but you didn't, and I think we're going to see some changes. Let's go back to talking about the mortgage brokerage business. As a representative of that, I'm just so thrilled that you're on the program for this, from that aspect. How have these changes affected the mortgage brokerage business?
Well, the market itself has completely, you know, eliminated. I'm in New York, so I would say about 50% of the companies are gone.
Selling to, or you were aware of that?
Mortgage brokers, my colleagues.
Yeah. Mortgage
my
brokers,
colleagues.
Okay.
Gone, yeah. And that's sad because if there was somebody in the business for 20, 25 years and they just couldn't hack it anymore, or they weren't making enough money because it's so hard now to close loans, they had to leave. you know.
Yeah.
On the flip side, it was good that companies that popped up during the refi frenzy that were just trying to cold call and get as many refi loans as possible, not in the best interest of the client, if they left, maybe that's a good thing.
Alice and Joe, I've been dominating these questions. I want you to jump in the fray here and ask the questions. Alice, Joe?
Yeah, I've got more a comment than a question, because I think it's so great that you have written a book to help the consumer, to educate the consumer. I've long been an advocate of education as maybe a more effective way to do things than regulation. And as this Consumer Financial Protection Act is being considered, I would much prefer that be a Consumer Education Act and provide the consumer some place to go. Your book is a start, but how nice would it be if they had a place to go where they could interact with somebody to talk through circumstances, or, you know, any thoughts on that?
Well, a consumer or a client is supposed to be able to go to their loan officer to discuss this. The loan officer is supposed to be the educator. They're supposed to be... The mortgage loan officer is supposed to be educated in a way that they can communicate their knowledge to the client so that the client is able to make their best choice. That's what we're here for.
Well, and I totally agree with you. The problem I find, we do a lot of training for loan officers, and a lot of them, whether it comes from management or it's just their own personal style or they've been doing this for many years, they're in sales mode. And, you know, making the sale, moving on to the next customer, if that one's not going to be a good sale. We do, too, stress a lot that they need to spend time coaching a customer, and a lot of them just don't want to take the time to do that. They want to get on to the next lead.
Right, because they feel the deal's done. You know, we can make our commission and move on. And I'm not being negative or anything, because that's my job too.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe people need to take their jobs just a little bit more seriously. Think of yourselves as, you know, well, I guess a stockbroker might not be the best example. What about, I can't think of anybody. An insurance agent, a financial advisor,
yep.
A therapist, a bartender. Aren't we supposed to listen and understand what the people want?
Well, I think that's when you bring up insurance advisor, that's where the whole skin in the game concept comes from. You know, when they talk about that in Washington and they look at how should a loan officer be compensated, they compare it to an insurance agent, you know, that it's graduated payments. It's
right.
Not all just because the loan closes. How do you feel about the new one-page examples that are out there in the in this proposed truth in lending rule? You know, they're trying to change the disclosures and make them simpler for customers to read, and so they've developed the one-pagers, and then, of course, the new truth in lending with, you know, tables on it. Have you had a chance to look at those yet?
And just glancing through in memos and stuff, I think that, you know, if they gave three examples and it's clear,
mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, this is what's included in the APR. And simply, this is your interest rate, and this is the APR, and this is how they come to it. But, of course, there's going to be way too much information, and then it's just going to confuse the consumer.
We just have a few minutes left, and I want to get, as a parting question out, about your view of third-party origination. What is your perspective as it relates to the future of third-party lending?
For the mortgage broker?
Yes. Well, the entire broker or banker, I mean, anyone who's involved in the third-party aspect, whether they're funding the loans or originating loans.
I think that there's always going to be a need for this third-party lender and third-party providers with the secondary market. There's always going to be a need because it's always there. I think that it will change. You guys talk about compensation. I think compensation will be lower, just like compensation is now going to be lower on Wall Street. So I think the future is there. It's just going to change. So it might eliminate people that might have gone into the business because they thought it was a big money maker. So it'll be a smaller industry.
It will, but I tell you, I couldn't agree with you more. There's not been a more effective sales force in our industry than the mortgage broker. So I agree with you, absolutely, Dale, that the mortgage brokers are not going to go away entirely unless they just absolutely legislate them out, which would be absolutely the worst thing they could do. I believe they're the most effective. Yes, compensation is going to change, and it's going to have a real dramatic effect. Real quick, tell us how they can tell everyone again about the name of the book and how they can buy it. We've just got a few moments left before we have to wrap this up.
All right. The name of the book, The New Rules for Mortgages by Penguin, and it's available Barnes & Noble, Borders, Amazon, anywhere, I guess, books are sold.
Dale Robin Siegel, thank you so much for joining us, reaching out to us. It's a thrill to have you here. Love to have you back and talk more as you continue to write and publish. It's a pleasure, and we want to talk to you more. Folks, we just want to thank you so much as we wrap up this week's broadcast for joining the program. We encourage you to pass this around to others in the industry. Tell them about this program. We're one of the most valuable resources if you want to just kind of get a nugget, a serious impact of understanding what's going on in the markets. We're your place. Lickin' on Lending. Tell your friends about it. We want to thank you for being a listener, and we look forward to having you back next week. I think that wraps it up. You guys have a great week. Remember this, the mortgage industry is here to stay. We're alive and well. It's going to change, and we'll help you understand the change is coming. Thank you.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.